We kick off the noon hour of today's BPR with the Boston Police Commissioner, William Evans. He'll take your questions and ours on post-Ferguson and Staten Island fallout, the Paris effect, and keeping Boston safe during a possible Olympics.
New Governor Charlie Baker talks a good game about closing the achievement and fixing the schools K-12 all around Massachusetts. How's he going to do that? We're going to ask our education expert. Then lots of us talk a good game, too, about how we're going to ditch the dreary office culture and work in blissful freedom from home. We'll get from you the pros and cons of working in your pajamas. And finally, Jared Bowen, WGBH Arts Editor, on the latest in stage and screen all around the city. All this coming up on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Jim Brady, I am Marjorie Egan. Welcome to hour number two of Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Hello, Jim.
Hey there, Marjorie. So joining us in Studio 3, as he does every month, to take our questions and yours, is Boston Police Commissioner William Evans. We are told he just returned from some special secret training in Florida. We're going to get to the bottom of that, despite what Commissioner Evans would like to keep to himself. Commissioner Evans, it's very good to see you.
Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Pleasure.
Really? Some secret training in Florida?
Yes, yes.
What
come
was that
clean,
about, please,
Commissioner.
No. You know, I'm obviously a runner, and I went down to Orlando on Saturday. I got there around noon, and I ran the Walt Disney Marathon on Sunday morning.
How fast?
Well, I did in 3:42, and that's like 6 or 7 stops to get my picture with the character. So I did pretty good. You know what I mean? And if you go on the Disney website, you'll see me with Mickey, Aladdin, and all. Like, I stopped 6 or 7 times. So overall, you know, when I looked at the results, out of 20,000, I finished 825. So
that's
I did pretty
excellent.
Good.
Yeah. Wait a minute. So you're actually running through the Enchanted Village with all the rides?
Well, you go through all 5 parks, and they have characters lined up on the side. You can run over and get your picture taken, and Disney sends them. So I was looking at them pretty good. They came out pretty good. So I was running for the, you know, Martin Richard.
Were you? I didn't know that.
I got the shirt on. And
yeah,
so,
Martin Richard's the 8-year-old boy who was killed in the marathon. Yeah. His sister lost her leg, family injured.
Yeah.
You're from Dorchester.
It was a fun event. And, you know, I had never done that one. That was my 48th marathon. So, you know, I enjoy it. And I was back on a plane in the afternoon to come home. So a quick 24-hour junket down there.
You see, if we two were running 48 marathons, Jim, then our shirt collars would be a little bit too big for us. Like the commissioner was too big for him.
Obviously, I got to tighten this up. So.
Okay.
So, Commissioner, in the last, a lot of news in the last week or two, most current is, as you know, I guess it was last Thursday, was it? Whatever day it was, Boston was picked by the United States Olympic Committee to... Oh, and by the way, the commissioner is taking your calls. I should have said that. 877-301-897. Anything you want to discuss with the commissioner of the Boston Police, you are welcome to. Olympics, the U.S. Olympic Committee picked Boston to be the United States representative. We'll know in 2017 if we get the Olympics. But part of the responsibility, I assume, is to begin planning for security issues. What's your part in this, and what does this mean?
Well, you know, it's obviously a huge undertaking. You know, when we had the Democratic National Convention, I was part of that planning and making that a successful event. So it's of the magnitude of something like that, probably even bigger. So, you know, most likely Homeland Security will make this a special security event where Secret Service will take over the lead of it. And, you know, we'll work closely with the Secret Service, FBI, state, and all our partners to make sure the Olympics are a great event in the city.
Why shouldn't that concern us? Why shouldn't when Secret Service, FBI, Homeland Security take over security in our town, your town, for an event? Why you're the person who is directly responsible to the people of Boston and obviously surrounding communities come into Boston? Why shouldn't that concern us?
I think you know any event now. Unfortunately, the world we've come to live in. You know, there's an increased security threat. We've seen what happened in Paris. We've seen what happened with our marathon. So, you know, obviously, such a high-profile event like the Olympics, or even last year's marathon, you know, we basically have to make sure people feel secure, whether they're coming from all over the world, all over the nation, that people can come here, enjoy the games, both as spectators, as participants. So,
yeah, but do you worry about somebody looking over your shoulder? I mean, you are the top cop. I don't mean this facetiously. Yeah. Obviously, in Boston, and you've worked for decades to get there. How do you feel about some Fed looking over your shoulder?
I don't mind. I mean, for the most part, you know, last marathon, we work with the Feds, we work with Secret Service. All hands were on deck to make that. But most of the time, Jim, and we work all the time with the Secret Service. We've had more presidential visits over the last 20 years with Bush, Clinton, President Obama. They're a great agency to work with. We work with the you know, the SAC here. You know, they're great to work with. So, you know, I'm sure they'll let us run the show, and their work behind the scenes. And that's the way it's always been.
You know, one of the things, Commissioner Evans, it was in a piece from The Guardian, which is kind of critical of Boston. And basically, they were saying that one of the reasons we may be attractive for the Olympics is because while many people would think we did a great job in the marathon, other people would think, well, there are people that were, you know, in this lockdown in their homes in Boston while they're looking for the younger Sarnaev brother in the Watertown situation. And critical of the DNC, the convention in 2004, which I remember being at. We talk a lot about police going out looking in their uniforms, like Mike is in over there, not looking like a scary person.
He looks pretty scary to me, by the way.
Well, no, he looks very nice. He looks very nice. But I remember being at the convention, and police, Boston police, remember we came out of the convention?
They were
in riot gear, and then they had the protesters were in those cages. And it was weird to me. They were cages, and I think they had netting over the top of them so they couldn't get out and stuff like that. I didn't think, due respect, that we looked very friendly, the police department in Boston. It was 11 years ago, but still.
But I think, Marjorie, we've learned a lot. I think, you know, the approach we've been using lately is a softer approach. I think you've seen the marathon last April.
Yes, very different.
And the biggest thing I wanted was to people to come, and that marathon looked like it always was, which is a family-friendly environment. We had some tactical assets, but they were all out of sight, so nobody could see it. I understand, you know, people's perception of coming in, it shouldn't look like an armed camp. And back when the DNC was going on, I think there was a different mentality of putting the guys out there with the helmets and sticks.
Yeah.
But throughout these protests, dealing with Black Lives Matters, we had a protest last night, about 40 or 50 people walking around the city. We've been very low-key. You know, we're not going to have that type of presence out there. We've learned, again, if you come looking like you want to fight, then you're going to get a fight. So I think we've shown and learned that the softer approach works better. If things go a little out of whack, then we have troops ready to move in with the equipment if need be.
And in fairness, that was not that long after 9/11, obviously, the 2004 convention. Our number is 877-301-8970. If you have questions for Commissioner Bill Evans, who's going to be with us for at least another 25 minutes or so, 877-301-8970. We've got Anthony in the car. Anthony, thanks for calling.
Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Jim, Marjorie, and Commissioner Evans. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to commend Commissioner Evans on the conduct of the police during the Eric Garner protest. I was actually a student who attended one of those protests, and I called into you guys talking about, you know, the issues associated with that last time we spoke on air about it. So for one, I wanted to commend him on that. And I was wondering where he's at with the status of body cameras for cops in Boston, if there's any plans for pilot programs with body cameras, or if you can give us any updates about that situation.
Anthony, thanks for the call. What is this? We've talked to you a lot about this body camera thing. Where are things today?
I mean, me and the mayor are looking at it. We're dealing right now with, you know, the protests going on, and we understand, you know, there's nationwide, there's basically a cry for them. You know, we're looking at the pros and the cons right now, Jim. You know, if you put the body cameras on, again, there's a lot of unknowns out there. When do you have the cameras on? We go into a lot of people's homes, you know, domestic calls, sexual assault calls, and, you know, to go behind people's doors and have cameras on and then get snapshots of things that maybe somehow can be used against those parties later, you know, there's no case law on what the parameters are using them. So, you know, we haven't ruled it out, Anthony, but there's still a lot of unknowns out there. I think initial results have shown that complaints against officers have gone down, so I see the benefits of it, but it's still in its infancy stage, and so we're just looking at the pros and cons, and we're not against it by any means, but I got to tell you, the verdict's still out on the pros and cons.
Well, two things, Commissioner, if I can. And by the way, if you want to speak to the Commissioner, the number is 877-301-8970. Is it fair to say that you and the mayor are more open to the question than you were when the debate started? Is that a fair statement?
It's a fair statement.
And secondly, the stuff that I've read, and I admit this is not conclusive, it's all fairly new, is the data so far is pretty powerfully suggesting de-escalates situations. And again, I think the concerns you raise about privacy are totally legitimate that I assume you, the mayor, city council, whomever, would address. But the data seems to show that it does reduce the tension between police officers and the public. Now, is that's also a fair statement?
Well, I read one study in California, and I think pretty much, Jim, that's about the only one I've seen.
Okay.
So, if we look at how many departments have it now. I'd be interested in 6 months what the additional study said, because all I've seen is one study out right now. But, again, I'm all for it. It's just a matter also of the costs, the storage. It's an enormous amount of people power in monitoring the cameras as well as the costs. But, if we see more studies but clearly right now, it's something we're looking at.
We're talking to Police Commissioner Bill Evans, who joins us every month. This is a great story by Nestor Ramos in the Boston Globe yesterday, talking about this beanbag, police officers firing small beanbags at this gentleman who turned on every burner on his gas stove and threatened to blow up his triple-decker in Dorchester Saturday night, and police were there. Tell us about these beanbag shotguns. Yeah. Never heard of this.
No, we've had them for some time, Marjorie.
Really?
And we've used them. It's a non-lethal, less lethal weapon that we have. And our sergeants are trained and they're well qualified in their use. And it's for a situation that possibly that we could use lethal force. Clearly, this individual was intoxicated.
Yeah.
He had some mental issues. He weighed, I think, 290 pounds. He was 6'3".
Wow.
He had put all the gas on in his house, was threatening his mother, who was unfortunately locked in a room. Very dangerous situation. But the officers who respond were quick to sort of contain the situation, call for a lieutenant and a sergeant, and they quickly went down there with this. And rather than use, a regular gun, and we're unfortunately, trained that if we're going to shoot, we use deadly force. And in this particular case, they used a beanbag, and the family was thrilled that although they thought, we had every right to shoot, to kill there, that we chose the more soft approach. And so it's an effective tool. We use it on pit bulls, dangerous dogs.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a dumb question. Are these little teeny tiny bean bags or is it a big end
of
the gun?
No, it's bean bags that
tiny. And they fit out down the nozzle?
They carried by, when you mention a sergeant in that situation, are they always carried as an alternative?
The sergeants have them.
They have them all the time, wherever they are.
If they don't have them in the cruiser, they'll have them at the desk, and they'll run back and get them and bring them. So a lot of them carry them with them all the time. So, if you get into a situation where we have, obviously, someone mentally deranged, and this poor kid had a history of pulling knives and was very violent. So it's nice that we can come out of that with a positive result.
So if you get hit with a barrage of beanbags, what happens to you?
It can be an issue, like a jolt, and you might get some bruising.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's like anything. Heaven forbid you hit someone in the eye with it.
Okay.
There could be danger to the eye. Or, I think I read in the paper that once someone got hit right in the chest and they died. But for the most part, all the studies done say, except some bruising, it sort of momentarily immobilizes you.
So you're
knocked
you
down,
over. Okay.
But, mostly, I think the poor kid went to the hospital, didn't even really have to be treated for it other than his mental issue. So, again, we have some non-lethal tools such as pepper spray and that. We've never gone to tasers. We've never gone to any other type of devices. And in this case, it was an excellent use of restraint by our officers, by our supervisors, and the family was thrilled that we chose that route.
We're talking to Commissioner William Evans of the Boston Police Department. He spends time with us every month quite kindly. Let's go to Allison and Lynn. You're on with Commissioner Evans. Hi there, Allison.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. How are you all?
We're good. Thanks for the call.
Great. Thank you.
So, Commissioner, I'm just curious, and I realize that there is a certain brotherhood within, but what is your reaction about the behavior of the New York City Police Department regarding the new mayor there and how they've not just turned their backs, but the symbolic aspects of it, the behavior, the misconceptions, and all of that? How do you take that?
Well,
what's your perception on that?
My perception is, you know, it's a very emotional time for those officers. You know, they lost two of their brother officers. You know, there was a lot of negativity towards police in general. We are feeling it here in Boston. We're feeling it across the nation. And some of it might be justified, but unfortunately, everybody's bearing the brunt of what happened in Ferguson and what happened in New York. And, you know, I know the mayor had said some things that touched a raw nerve with the officers that they believed brought up the tension to the point where this person who obviously had some mental issues took it out on two young officers with families. And so, you know, I think if he was more supportive of the police when this event had, not that I'm not saying the guy and the officers were right there, but I think they felt that he abandoned the police department in favor of, you know, this whole incident, which was ugly. And, you know, I wish that whole incident could have been more transparent. The grand jury proceedings were more transparent. That was ugly. I'm not going to get here and say those cops were wrong, or I'm not going to say, you know. But I think if people heard what the grand jury listened to, but I think the mayor was quick to jump on the bandwagon against the cops. So I think he could have done a better job of staying out of it. So, you know, whether they turn their back or not, emotionally, I think they're all hurting. And hopefully, you know, they can mend fences because, you know, what's going on in Paris, what's going across the nation, now's not a time for us to be playing games with national security.
Allison, thank you for the call. You know, relevant to that conversation, the Fraternal Order of Police, the national entity, is lobbying Congress to get added to hate crime legislation any assault on a police officer. Is that a good idea?
Any assault on a police officer?
Any assault on a police officer would, in addition to the crime that currently exists, would be considered a hate crime under federal legislation.
I think if they look like there was a motivation behind it.
Because, you know, they were a cop, meaning.
Because they were a cop, yeah. Right. I mean, we unfortunately get into domestics all the time. We get into mental, dealing with mental people some days. And we're in barroom fights. So basic assaults, no. But clearly if we are targeted because of what our profession is, I'm all for it.
Understood.
We're talking with Commissioner, Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans. Our number is 877-301-8897 if you'd like to speak to him. You just mentioned, Commissioner, that police officers are still sort of paying the price of what happened in Ferguson and what happened with Eric Garner in Staten Island in New York. What's it been like in Boston? There was a protest, 40, 50 people on the Black Lives Matter thing just last night. Are police still bearing that brunt in Boston?
We are, you know. What does that mean? I mean, the sad thing is we were out there last night and, you know, they marched from Tremont Street down by the Garden. And, you know, again, a lot of negativity being thrown at my offices, you know.
Calling names, that
names,
kind of stuff?
Names. And, we had some minorities screaming at our minority officers that they were traitors. And so a lot of ugliness is still going on. And Marjorie, you know, I think everyone realizes this was a wake-up call for police across the country. I think Boston here, we got a great relationship with our community. And honestly, I wish the dialogue now would go to the violence that happens every day on the streets of the city. You know, Christmas Day, you know, I was home. I got a call for a young kid shot on Humboldt Avenue. I was out there on Christmas Day. Christmas night, three other people were shot. I didn't get one phone call from anyone over what happened on Christmas Day. Three or four nights ago, we were all out 0 degrees on Harrisoff Street, four people shot. There's no outcry about young black kids getting shot every day in the street. And I wish they could sort of push all this energy, not only at us, but also at the senseless violence that goes on the street every day.
When a police officer is walking down the street and someone yells at him some racial slur or you're a traitor or whatever it is, what are police supposed to do? Say nothing? Or what's the training?
Well, our training is basically we have a, you know, we do roll calls. We tell them, we tell them people are going to try to agitate us. You know, stand tall. Don't let it bother you. And for the most part, Marjorie, we've had about, you know, probably 10 protests now. And the officers have done a tremendous job, tremendous restraint. And I think we're getting a lot of rave reviews. And that's why I'm saying, you know, I know, you know, there might be a march this Monday, I'm hearing, on Martin Luther King Day. We're all for the protesting. All we ask is, you know, they do it respectfully, they do it peacefully, and they're not disrupting traffic. I know the public's starting to get real fed up at us that we're not doing more. And so, you know, I think everybody's got their point. Like the mayor says, it's time to engage in a dialogue, find out what we can do better. But I think I'd love to see more people paying attention, and let's scream and yell about the violence that goes on in our cities across this nation every day.
We're talking with Police Commissioner Bill Evans. He's with us until for another 15 minutes at least. So if you want to call him, now's your chance, 877-301-8970 or bpr@wgbh.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. We are joined, as we are every month, by the Boston Police Commissioner, Bill Evans, here to take our questions, your calls, at 877-301-8970. Commissioner, before we go back to the calls, Mayor Walsh, is tonight? Yeah, it is tonight.
Yeah.
State of the city. What's he saying about the cops?
Well, I think he knows we've done a real good job last year trying to address the violence the best we mm-hmm. can. I think he, you know, I think he's happy with the way the protests have gone there. He realizes the restraint. But again, we're not satisfied, Jim. We lost 53 people to homicides this year. And me and the mayor, our motto is one death's way too many. So the good thing is, you know, we had 35 less shootings than we did last year. We took 1,061 guns off the street. So
how much from the buyback? How much of that is?
I think about 400 okay. from the buyback. Yeah. So that's 700 guns that our officers have been running down, chasing kids, getting guns off their waistband. And honestly, no officer involved shooting with anyone who has had a gun. So it shows the amount of strain. So I think he knows how hard we're working, how well we do at community policing, and all the great events we do in the neighborhood every day that the public doesn't know about.
But he's not announcing some new initiative as to the police department that you're aware of, is he?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. 877-301-8970. Actually, Russell is in Providence, Rhode Island. You're next on Boston Public Radio with the commissioner of the Boston Police Department. Hi, Russell.
Good afternoon, Commissioner.
Hi, Russell.
I primarily wanted to speak about professionalism in police departments.
Yeah.
One of my biggest concerns is, for example, I didn't think that anything the mayor of New York said was really all that offensive. In fact, it'd be awesome if someone could find the exact quote and we hear how offensive or not it really was. But for the officers to turn their backs, to me, shows that they don't want any kind of oversight. And I find that really disturbing. If you watch the Eric Garner video, the officer used a chokehold that went against NYPD policy. And I don't know how many other jobs where you can violate company policy that results in someone's death and you still keep your job. So if there really are only a few bad cops and most of them are good, what is Boston doing to get rid of those few bad cops and not let them continue to break the rules and put citizens at risk?
Russell, thank you, Russell, for the call.
Yeah,
Commissioner.
I mean, we have a very good, you know, obviously anti-corruption and internal affairs unit that we're very transparent. You know, we do early intervention programs where if we see an officer having several complaints, we intervene. You know, we get them some counseling and whatnot. So we have a very active internal affairs investigation unit that you can go online, you can come into a station, we take phone calls, and we don't get a whole lot of complaints about conduct out in the street. But, you know, as far as getting back to the New York incident, again, I'm not saying those officers were right by any means, but I think the tone that the mayor had set after that wasn't really a big pro-police. And, you know, he sort of, you know, from what I heard, he sort of was not back in his department. And it was very emotional. I think if you lost two of your colleagues and your boss wasn't standing behind you, I think, you know, it's a natural reaction.
Chokeholds, I assume, have been outlawed in this department for a while.
They are.
Let's stay in New York City for 1 second. The two things that at least Lynch, the guy who runs the police union there, was particularly perturbed about, and I think a lot of his members, is one was some comments supportive of protests post-Ferguson, post-Garner in Staten Island. But the second thing, you and I discussed this last night on television, was the mayor, he's in a biracial family, his wife is black, telling his kid that he should be careful, essentially warning him about police. Let's bring it closer to home. I understand he's a mayor, so it's a different situation. He's got a different platform. But in light of history in this country and some history in this town, is that the wrong thing for a parent of a black kid or a Latino kid to be telling his son? Or is that the wrong thing to be doing?
Well, you know, again, Jim, here in the city, I think we've built a lot of respect and a lot of trust here. I mean, we're in every school. We're in every neighborhood center. We've given out more toys over the Christmas season. We have great interactions with the kid out there. So I hate to hear that young kids, and we're in the schools, we're trying to build the trust. So I would be a little upset if someone's telling their kids here in the city that they have to watch out for
the
police.
How about in that city, based on
the
history?
Well, yeah, again, I don't know. I know since de Blasio, Mayor de Blasio's got in there, you know, he's abandoned the stop and frisk policy, which, you know, clearly it sounds that that they had to tone it down. And you know, I've worked with Jeff Fagan and Anthony Braga, and Jeff Fagan sort of—
They're the ones who did the report,
did
right?
our report here, and he said, obviously, there was a problem there. And I think, you know, the mayor abandoned that. But, you know, to go public with that, I think it's one thing to say to your kid, but I think the way he went public with that sort of said, you know, don't trust the NYPD, mm-hmm. which is a slap in the face to them. Maybe you can say it to your kid, but I think him going public showed that he had no confidence in his department. And so I think that's the quote. When you tell someone to watch out for your police department, mm-hmm. There was some distrust there. And hopefully, again, they can bury the hatchet on that. And
you know, speaking of your community, every time you're here, you talk about sensitivity training, community connection. Ryan posts on Facebook, whenever you highlight the differences to you, differences between the BPD and other departments embroiled in scandals, you mentioned sensitivity training that new officers receive now in the academy. Do veteran officers receive any ongoing training as a regular part of being a police officer? If so, what portion of the training, et cetera, is in the areas of community policing versus training for use of surveillance or weapons or that sort of thing?
We do ongoing training. Again, our academy does a great job. Unlike a lot of academies, Jim, and I think I've talked to it, we bring in all kinds of groups. So our officers have a great understanding. You know, we got Mona Lisa Smith from Mothers in Justice and Inequality who comes and talks. She's a mother of a victim of a homicide, her son. She comes in and explains to our academy class what it is a mother's going through. You know, NAACP comes in. GBLT, gay, lesbian, they come in. And we'll keep operating more and more groups. And, you know, we're trying to get more of the veteran officers into in-service training so they also get it. But, you know, we want our officers to come out more as community people, not as a military force. We want to be problem solvers where arrest isn't the only solution. And I think Lisa Holmes, who's an African-American superintendent running the academy, she's doing a great job. In fact, you know, if I can give a plug right now, we have a upcoming entrance exam for the Boston Police Department in April. And so if anyone's out there and knows of anyone who wants to join the force, especially young African-American males, Vietnamese, you know, I encourage them all to please go online. You can sign up online because the more candidates we get, the more diverse we can be.
I like that a woman's running the academy there. Yeah. That's pretty neat, too. Bobby from Rockland, thank you for calling. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby. You're on with the commissioner.
Yeah. Hi, commissioner. How are you doing?
Very good, Bob.
That's good. I'm retired from one of the local departments next to Boston, so glad to be retired. Don't miss it at all. But anyway.
I'm looking forward to it.
Anyway, on the night of the Christmas tree lighting, my sister, who's retired, she's in her 60s. She was a college teacher. She keeps us one night a week over in Cambridge Gig, where she teaches a course and makes a little running around money. Well, to come back into Boston, where she lives, she came down to Leverett Circle. And that was, unfortunately, they had a diet going on. She was in her car, which was a two-week-old car, and she got stuck in the car. The protesters ran up the line of cars out of Leverett Circle. They pounced on her car. They hit her cars with signs. She ended up with a car 2 weeks old with smudges and scratches and little dings all over it. There was about 30 police officers there, combined state troopers and Boston cops, and not one of them did a thing. She said most of them didn't even unfold their arms. I think that's a disgrace. I mean, the people, honest people are out there trying to make a living and to protect these rights of freedom of speech for protesters. Police officers are now ordered to stand by and do nothing while other people's rights and property are being damaged.
Bobby, we hear you. No, we hear you. That you're saying they're being ordered. Let's hear what the commissioner is telling them to do or not do in these circumstances.
One of the things I clearly say when we begin this and the supervisors is we won't tolerate any type acts of vandalism, any disruptive, any assault on the officer, any violence at all. I apologize if, you know, that's the first I've heard of anyone's car getting vandalized to that extent. But one of the main things we give out in our orders is, hey, use a lot of restraint, but we will not tolerate anyone breaking a window or causing anyone's damage to any properties. For the most part, all the demonstrations we have, we really haven't had any reports of anything really being vandalized. So, you know, make sure, you know, if that happened to a car, she lets us know about it. But for the most part, it's a delicate balance here. You know, if we start dragging people in and it gets, you know, more, basically more antagonistic, then, you know, then we have other issues and we tie up officers for hours and hours. But for the most part, all these protests have been peaceful with very, very little damage. So, you know, we walk a fine line, but we won't tolerate anybody getting assaulted or any vandalism to anyone's property.
Bobby, thank you for the call. Phil, Facebook posting. What do you think, Commissioner, of your staff when they park in the handicapped spots or the bus stop in front of the Dorchester Court? This is a Marjorie issue, too, even though she's not Phil. It happens in capital letters all the time, says Phil, and frankly, parking isn't that much of a problem there.
Yeah, I don't tolerate it. I mean, you know, we're no better than anyone else, so if that's happening, please make sure you call the local station. You know, we've had those issues in the past. You know, I hope it's not Boston. As you know, you know, there's all kinds of different agencies that are coming, but no one should tolerate anybody parking illegally. And if that's happening, we need to know about it. Get the license plate. And please call it into us.
You know, I parked in a fire lane for like 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's about what he said, 30 seconds.
About 20 years ago.
I don't believe it.
Literally 20 seconds. My flashing lights were on, and Marjorie continues to bring it up for 20 years. Isn't there a statute of limitations on that or no?
Marcy Boulevard, too.
It was Marcy Boulevard. Excuse me, it was Marcy.
I love bringing up that incident, Jim.
Jim's had a lot of run-ins on Marcy Boulevard. You know, our producer just said, and this is a great question related to parking. The south end of Boston, you know, which has become quite an expensive area of Boston, unlike South Boston, which is still in transition, getting more expensive, but not quite up to the South End. In South Boston, forever, we have these space savers. I think the mayor allows them on the streets for 48 hours, the kitty litter boxes and the diaper bags and all this kind of stuff. The South End says no space savers. Where are you on space savers? Are you entitled to keep them if you shovel for three hours?
You hit one of my pet peeves.
Okay.
You know, I've lived in South Boston all my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's terrible over there. I mean, I know it's a tradition over there, but I got to tell you a secret. When I'm out jogging at 4:45 a.m, I'm throwing a lot of space savers out of there, you know, and I'm always afraid I'm going to get caught. But, you know, when it's not even snowing, people have out space savers. And after 5 days of snow, they still have them out. So, you know, I know it's a touchy thing, and I've lived over, and it's gotten worse to the point where it's not even snowing. And people put out these. And, you know, I'm running at 4:45 a.m, and someone has it in there who's never even come home for the night. So, you know, it's a touchy with me, a touchy subject. I'm not a big safe, you know, saver spot. But it's a
doggy
way.
Dog to park your car in South Boston, I think.
Right. Now, there are two police officers with you here. If you can just motion with your heads, is it legal for the police, either shake your heads up and down or negatively, for the police commissioner to unilaterally take the property of other people, use the space savers, and dispose. They're both shaking their heads.
Only after the 48 hours, Jim, before it snows.
Why don't you make a citizen's arrest, Jim? You know,
no,
like,
I'm just asking, and they apparently are.
Although, by the way, the double parking I've seen by police officers and stuff like that is not in Dorchester. I've seen it in South Boston.
A double
right
parking by policemen?
Once or twice.
You better stay out of South Boston.
Hey, Mr. Commissioner, there was a piece by Todd Wallach in the Globe the other day. I'll read you the first line. It was actually a couple of weeks ago. Two specialists in the state's public records law say the Boston Police Department is violating the statute, public records statute, by refusing to release the names of five officers who were caught driving drunk. I don't want you to play lawyer, obviously. Why aren't we get the article makes the point that if someone's arrested for drunk driving as a civilian, that's up on the website, why shouldn't the public know who these officers are?
I think they should know, Jim. You know, I don't think we're any better than anyone. I think the case here was it was a year, 2 years after when that more has to do with Corey and the request of information. I think as soon as after the incident happens, we always release the reports. And I know I spoke to the media afterwards, and I said, you know what, it wasn't worth making a big stink of it. We should have just released the names. So I think in the future, you know, I got nothing to hide. If our officers are wrong, they're wrong, Jim. And, you know, I think, our media was just basically going on being stringent on what the law says. And that's like, if you're going to request names of anyone locked up, we just can't release that information. But in the future, I think, for all the bad publicity we got in not being transparent, I think clearly, I've talked to Michael who's here, that won't happen again.
You know, speaking of releasing names and transparency, you mentioned when we began this discussion with you, Commissioner, that you had just come back from running a marathon with Dopey and Mopey and the Seven Dwarfs and all that down in... Are you going to put any of those pictures up on the Boston Police website so we can see you posing?
We'll see. I like the fact I ran with MR8, and that's a great organization. You know, I know, they'll have a team for this year's Boston Marathon. And, you know, I was supposed to go down to New York and run with them, but Mayor Menino passed away. And so I missed running for their association here. So I was proud to run the Walt Disney Marathon for their young son. You know?
They're a phenomenal family.
Yeah, and it's going to be a tough time for them with the trial coming up. And the sight of their son, in Calm for Peace and everything else is something I think we'll all still live with.
You know, before you go, only a minute left. You've been doing this a year and a week. I mean, this is a dream. You're a Boston kid. You were a cop. How many years were you a cop?
32.
Ooh, 32. What's this been like? I mean, what's the... like for you?
I like it. You know, it's never...
How stressful is this?
Well, that's why I have to go to Disney to run a
marathon.
It is,
isn't it?
And people say, why do you run? I says, because that's the only time I'm really not on my phone. It's the only time I sort of get to unravel a little bit. But it's been a tough job. And what's tough for me, Jim, more than anything now is I know how hard our men and women work every day. Mm-hmm. I know what great relationships we have. And unfortunately, there's a lot of anti-police sentiment out there towards us that I don't think is called for because, you know, every life matters to us every day. We work tremendously hard, and I hate to see that people are anti-Boston police because our hearts and soul go into this community to make sure every young kid's safe, no one gets injured, and me and Mae Walsh work hard every day to make this city the best place it can possibly be. So that's the frustrating part. None of us mind working hard, but I just wish the public would realize and respect us more, given what's happened other places. That's not us.
Commissioner, pleasure as always, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you very much for coming in, Commissioner. Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans joins us every month to take your calls and our questions. Commissioner Evans, again, thank you for being here.
Before he comes back, we should do a little research on this unilateral removal of the space savers by the Commissioner.
Yeah, I think so.
Consult some civil liberties
lawyers
and see what's going on.
You can jog right behind him tomorrow morning.
I just do enforcement. That's enforcement.
Okay. Coming up, earlier we were asking you about freedom of speech. Now we're going to ask you about freedom from the office. When you opt to be a freelancer or work at home, are there things about the office you miss? How about all those reams of paper? Or do you like working in your PJs? That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.